And so it is Christmas. And all of the different things that Christmas evokes for us are present in this celebration. All of the stress, all of the joy, all those memories of Christmas as a child, but all the hurts, all the confusion, all of the things that get kind of muddled and bundled together into this one experience that can be so overwhelming for so many and so confusing and so caught up with things that, you know, are not necessarily the most pleasant, the most amazing of experiences and encounters. In some ways, it's like that continued line that Daryl Kerrigan from the movie The Castle makes, you know, when someone is making a bid or an offering something for auction on the trading post, and he would continually just say, tell him he's dreaming. And some of us can feel like we're caught up in this dreamlike state during these days. For me, it all kind of started to take on a very real shape last month when I was in Jerusalem. So for the whole month of November until early this month, I was staying at this place called Tantor. The Tantor Center was set up in the 1970s, just after the fervor of the Second Vatican Council and that desire for the different churches to come together and to work to bring about unity and to have a place where different scholars from around the world could come and share their ideas and their dreams and their hopes and to build, you know, this sense of a better world, and continues to be a place where people from all different kinds of Christian traditions, and there are also members of staff who are Jewish and Islamic, and so it's this wonderful melting pot. So it was a great place to be for the month of November. But when we looked out from Tantor, the main thing that we looked out upon was the city of Bethlehem, and also the Palestinian town of Beit Jala. Now, the thing that mainly struck me when viewing this was the wall, that thing that circumnavigates around, basically following what's called the Green Line, the 1949 armistice line after that first war. And essentially, it follows that, although all too often it goes into territory that is way inside the West Bank, way inside territory that belongs, at least theoretically, to the state of Palestine. Now, people are doing various things to try and humanize this wall as much as possible, but it's a very dehumanizing thing to go through the wall. Sometimes it's the different checkpoints. So checkpoint 300 is one of the most famous. So it's the one that's the main point of entry along the Hebron Road between Jerusalem and Bethlehem. And you just go through this hundreds of meters of this concrete and barbed wire and mesh fence with Israeli security with their machine guns and all the cameras and all of the sense of just being as oppressed as possible. And particularly in the mornings when you go and you see all the Palestinians is trying to get through the checkpoint to go to work in the morning, and the soldiers, depending on their mood and whatever else, they can just take ages and you know, sometimes hours to let a person through the checkpoint, and there's so much stress because the Palestinians know that they'll probably lose their job, and they had no job security and all of that. We went to this place called Wiam, which is a Christian peace center there, and that's their backyard, and so unfortunately the wall was built right through the middle of their property. So they lost half of their property. So they used to grow vegetables to help to feed the people in the nearby Beit Jala refugee camp that was established after the 1949 camp war. So it's one of the oldest refugee camps in the world. Bethlehem until that point was a majority Christian city. But after that war, many Muslim refugees moved in. And so it lost that sense. It went from about 80% Christian to less than 20% Christian over the years. And people still, for many generations, have now lived in that camp. That's one of the the many hot points are there. It's built around, the wall is built around Rachel's tomb, a Jewish area and a place of significance to the Jewish people. And so even though it's well within Palestinian territory, this section of the wall just juts out surrounding an Israeli military camp and the Rachel's tomb. They have tried to, you know, as many street artists have begun to decorate the Palestinian side of the wall to try and add a little bit of life and color. Particularly, there's a lot of artwork by the famous graffiti artist Banksy. So he's attempted to add his own kind of quirky view of things to lift the spirits and to bring hope to people that are very desperately lacking in that. And we heard so many stories of young Palestinians who have no sense of future at all, and the only hope is to get out of the West Bank and to go somewhere else to build a life somewhere else, which of course is not an easy thing to do. But that hope of God and that hope of life continues to be there. I mean, we can understand the background, we can understand the reasons that the Israeli people have built the wall to provide that protection. It was built ostensibly during the Second Intifada back in the early 2000s. And we can understand that need to provide protection and safety. But when you read through the scriptures, when you read through the Torah and the writings of the Nevi'im, the prophets especially, like when you read, for example, 1 Kings 10 to 12, which talks about the kingdom of Solomon and all of the judgments of God against that kingdom for being too oppressive, for having slaves, for treating people badly. When you read it, I mean, that's exactly, unfortunately, what the Israeli government continues to do now. They've turned from being the people that have been oppressed, as they had been for most of their history, and unfortunately, Christians have been one of the major sources of that oppression, with the many pogroms, the many wars against the Jewish people, and for not standing up to protect them during the period of the Holocaust. But unfortunately, the people of the Middle East are now the ones who have to suffer because of the mistakes that the Europeans have made in the past. We cannot stand proud in Australia either, because we have these places where we build walls and we keep people separated and we have people in detention as well. Thankfully, the Manus Island Detention Center is finally closed, with who knows how many human rights violations that have happened there. But Nauru continues to be an absolute blight on our whole social consciousness, and the fact that that remains as this center that we continue to use to keep people away from us, so that we don't have to look at their faces, we don't have to hear their stories, they can just remain as numbers and statistics. And this is not the way that God intended it to be for us. On Friday, this article was published in the New York Times by a friend of mine. Stephanie Saldana is a member of the Tantor community, so I got to meet her and her husband, who's the program director there. So Stephanie's on the right, Frederick is on the left. That was taken at the beginning of this year, so the children have grown a little bit bigger since then. They've been married for 11 years and have chosen to live in the Middle East during that time. Stephanie is American, from San Antonio in Texas, comes from a very Catholic family. Her father is the director of Caritas in the diocese, the Archdiocese of San Antonio. And her father has managed over many generations now to bring lots and lots of refugees from very oppressed places, but especially from the Middle East, to live and to settle among the Catholic community there in San Antonio. And it's one of the great success stories of integration and community building that is possible. Frederick's French, but since moving to the Middle East, and they've been living in between Syria, Iraq, and most recently in Israel, Frederick has become a member of the Syrian Catholic Church and is now studying to be a priest within that church. Jojo is the oldest on the right there, the most gregarious, and like all the members of the family, speaks fluently in French, English, and Arabic. It's really annoying when you meet these little kids that are able to speak fluently in all these languages. Sebastian's in the middle, and he's a little bit quieter, and then Carmel, she speaks fluent Carmel at the moment, but she's there on the left. So Stephanie, for the last 2 years, through university funding, has been able to travel around the world visiting different refugee camps. She's writing a book and researching, especially a lot of the cultural heritage that has been lost by all of the work of ISIS. And don't you hate those little sticky flies that like crawling in your nose? She's been to refugee camps in Jordan, in Iraq, in Lebanon, in Turkey, in Greece, as well as visiting people who have managed to escape into Europe, to those countries that have welcomed them. And we thank and praise God for places like Germany, places like the Scandinavian countries that continue to live the gospel. So she's at the beginning of this month, she went to the island of Lesbos in Greece. It's one of those places where you might have seen pictures of the beaches there that have been covered in the life jackets of the refugees that have attempted to make their way by sea to, you know, escaping these situations of the violence of ISIS and all of that. And she went to this camp called Moria. Journalists aren't allowed to go into the camp for the very obvious reasons. They don't want these stories to be broadcast. But she managed to get in and to take some of these photos. It's just a tent city, even though it's now winter and people are freezing. It's below zero at night. And yet, a place that was built for 2,000 people by the UNHCR, now there are more than 6,000 people, plus many thousands more who live in the areas immediately around the walls that surround this camp. So it's a place of complete degradation and dehumanization, very few sanitary facilities at all, a place that she describes in the article is just absolutely confronting. I just want to quote a little bit from the article that she wrote. It's linked on my website, so you can read it in full there, as well as visiting her website, which is Mosaic Stories, telling some of these amazing stories of life and hope in the midst of all of this. I've visited many refugee camps in the Middle East, but never have I seen anything like Moria, a place Pope Francis has likened to a concentration camp. I've also never understood the true meaning of Christmas, a story in which Jesus was born into a family that became refugees, until I visited the people who are now forced to call it home. If we want to imagine the Nativity, we needn't go further than the tent of Ala ad-Din from Syria, who left his home just days after he married. Now, his wife is pregnant, and when I met them, they were living in the tent outside of Moria, because there was no room for them inside. If we want to see today's flight to Egypt, we needn't look far. Nearly every refugee I've ever met has a story about escaping in the middle of the night. If we want a miracle, I'd suggest looking at Anwar, who, despite crying while recounting the destruction of Mosul, still paused in the middle and offered me a clementine. It's a kind of fruit like a mandarin. As we live through the largest migration in modern history, Christmas invites us to recognize our story in the millions who have been displaced by tyrants, war, and poverty, and to see their stories in ours. It is this truth that if we're trying to make sense of this scene, if we're trying to make sense of what it means to be a people who celebrate and acknowledge and honor the gift of God becoming one of us, we can't do that by locking people away. We can't do that by isolating people. You know, when we think about gifts and the whole tradition of giving gifts and sharing in that, well, what is the one thing that we would really long for? You know, if that magic genie came and granted us that wish, what would be the one thing that we would long for, the one thing that we would hope for? What is the one thing that is necessary in our lives? And for many people, the pain of Christmas is those relationships that have been fractured and broken, the people that we miss in our lives. I mean, sometimes that's through death, and then we can simply pray for that person, but often it is because that relationship is broken down. Perhaps we can indeed pray and long for reconciliation and healing to happen in that relationship. Perhaps we can be a person who brings joy and trust and goodness into the world. You know, it's way too easy to be grumpy. It's way too easy to be that cynical person sitting there and, you know, as the uncle in often family gatherings. You know, it's a role that I can fit into so easily and so well in that. But we need this gift of joy ourselves. We need this life this hope, this dreaming, this possibility. And we need to see, well, what can we share? What can we offer into the world? You know, what can we do to bring about a world that's more just, that's more sustainable, that's more about peace, that's more about reconciliation, that's trying to rip, to tear down those walls, those separations that prevent us from living as a single community? What are the ways that we can bring that new life and that hope into the world? How can we share those gifts and that treasure with others? What are the ways that we can work to perhaps to write to our local members of parliament, to write to the Australian government to say, what is happening can no longer be done in my name. I refuse to allow this to happen in the name of this country that I love. And yet we continue to let walls separate and divide. We allow ourselves to be dehumanized by this process that refuses to recognize basic human rights. Let's be people that stand up for what we believe. Let's be people who actively seek justice in the world, that allow Christ to be born again as the Savior, offering life, offering humanity this gift of love, offering this possibility of forgiveness of sins by demonstrating that within our families, by reaching out to people that we are estranged from, by offering that gift of peace and reconciliation at this time.